the 2022 elections were stolen just like the 2020 elections. I know that's probably right off the bat going to take some of you and get you saying, oh no, it was abortion or it was student loan debt or whatever. No, there was a red tsunami. It happened as far as the voters are concerned, but the elections in Arizona, Pennsylvania, Nevada, Alaska, I mean, you name it, New Mexico, there's New York, so many of these elections where they were not being held in states that had put in voter integrity laws, such as Florida. Anyone who didn't have voter integrity laws experienced a lack of voter integrity, not the voters themselves, but the powers that be who were driving the vote counts, not the votes. Again, I can't be more clear about this. The red tsunami of voters happened. The red tsunami of election results did not, and it's based upon not abortion, not student debt relief, not an idiot electorate that put in John Fetterman allegedly, or a dead guy into the state legislature. No, that didn't happen. What did happen was that there was a red wave, and we didn't get to see it. We didn't get to see the culmination of it. And where we were hurt the most is the Republican Party did not regain control of the United States Senate. That's a bad thing. And it's going to get even worse if Herschel Walker loses on December 6th. Every election, we always hear about how this is the most important election. This is the most important election. Every election is the most important election of the era of our lifetimes. I've heard that many times. Well, folks, this one is an extraordinarily important election. I'm not going to say it's the most important. But here's what's at stake, and I think people need to understand that this is not just the state of Georgia that is going to be affected by this. This is the entire nation that would be dramatically affected if Raphael Warnock were to win, or dramatically affected in the opposite direction if Herschel Walker were to win. At stake here is the filibuster. Right now, Democrats have quote-unquote control over the Senate, 50 to 49. They have the magic number of 50, and considering they have the White House, that means that if they lose, even if they lose in Georgia, they're still going to have the majority due to Kamala Harris, the vice president, having the tie-breaking vote. So they will have 50, and if Herschel Walker wins, then Republicans will have 50. They'll have the majority. But here's the thing. You might say, oh, well, what's one more? That just means that Kamala Harris won't have to break the tie if it's 51-49, if Raphael Warnock were to win. It's much worse than that because of the filibuster. To change the rules in the Senate, to eliminate the filibuster, you just need a majority. You just need 51 votes. So that means that right now, the only reason that we don't have the filibuster still in place is because of Senator Joe Manchin, Democrat from West Virginia. You can also argue for Arizona Senator Kyrsten Sinema as being against eliminating the filibuster, but we can assume that she would probably bend. The thing that allowed her essentially to be against the filibuster was because Joe Manchin was against the filibuster. I would argue that if Joe Manchin came out in favor of getting rid of the filibuster, that Kyrsten Sinema would not stand in their way. And that could be the scenario that we're looking at if Raphael Warnock were to win, because then it would be 51-49. Even if Joe Manchin voted against eliminating the filibuster, that would still be 50-50, and the tie would be broken by Kamala Harris, and the filibuster would be gone. Now, a lot of people will come out and say, oh, it's okay, though, because at least we've got control of the House. At least we can prevent, you know, massive whatever it is they're going to go after, gun control being the primary one. And my understanding, my predictions for what's ahead with the next slate of lawmakers on Capitol Hill, they will go after more gun control laws. Now, if that being the case, you know, assuming that they do, assuming that we see more mass shootings, and I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, the mass shootings are false flag attacks. I don't know. I have enough information about them. I do think it's conspicuous that these mass shootings, these mass murders, they always seem to be happening at the most convenient time for the gun control lobby. It literally, you couldn't pick out a time better for when they need it, mass shootings happen. Okay, a little big string of mass shootings occur, and then they get gun control passed. Then all of a sudden, you don't see mass shootings for weeks or months. Now, elections are over. Time for more mass shootings. Again, I'm not suggesting that, for example, the mass shooting in Colorado that was perpetrated by somebody claiming to be non-binary at a gay bar. I'm not suggesting that that was a false flag attack. But again, folks, it does seem awfully convenient that right at the, when they need a false or when they need a mass shooting that it occurs, when they need it for political reasons. Of course, obviously, you got Joe Biden out there now saying, we got to get rid of all the can't believe people can walk into a store and get a semi-automatic weapon. Okay, what he's talking about, like a semi-automatic 22 pistol? I mean, it's the guy just doesn't get it. Of course, he's referring to what they like to nebulously refer to as assault weapons, but it's not just that. They're going after all the guns long term. And that when I say long term, I'm not talking about decades. I'm talking about months or years at the most. They are going to try to get rid of all of the guns, all the firearms. People don't need firearms. We're done with defunding the police. Now we're going to take away your firearms. And it can happen, folks. Don't tell me that it can't. Don't be so naive to say that it can't happen, because the same people that said that it couldn't happen, I used to be one of them, by the way, the same people that said it can't happen, they can't get all those guns, we'll fight back, we are the same people who thought, they couldn't take away our freedoms over a disease with a 99.993% recovery rate for people over 40. They couldn't keep us out of work. They couldn't keep us out of church. They couldn't keep it to where we have to wear face diapers all day. We thought this. We thought that, the people will fight back. And I was there, and we didn't. I went and embarrassingly stood in front of a crowd of media when there was no crowd of people. And we had this event that I went to back, in the early days of the pandemic. This event that I went to was heavily publicized. The organizers had, they said that, oh my gosh, we're going to have at least thousands, maybe tens of thousands of people showed up. We had fewer people show up than there were press. January 6th changed a lot of things for a lot of people. People aren't willing to, patriots aren't as willing to go express themselves, to exercise their right of assembly, to exercise their right to protest. They just aren't. It sucks. Bad. Really bad. But that's the state of affairs. So don't tell me that, we'll definitely fight back. A lot of us will, for sure, if they go after our guns. But it's probably not nearly as many as you think. You think, there's 300 million, 500 million, however many firearms are in America. There's a lot of patriots that love their guns. Yeah, I know. There's a lot of Democrats that are buying guns now, too, because of crime, because of all these other things. But those of us who would use our firearms to fight for our liberties, to fight against tyranny, there are just far fewer of us than we think. So that's sorry, a little side note there. Point is that as they push for gun control, they were able to pass gun control because Mitch McConnell and his merry band of rhinos were able to overcome the filibuster. That was their focus. So now they don't, or if Raphael Warnock were to win, then they wouldn't even have to go that far. They could pretend to maintain some conservative credibility and still get their gun control passed, because they want Mitch McConnell, Lisa Murkowski, Susan Collins, Mitt Romney, they want gun control. And Kevin McCarthy can't stop it, because here's the thing, here's what will end up happening. You get enough mass shootings, you get enough outrage, enough people screaming, do something, then you will have rhinos in the House that will side with the Democrats, side against our freedoms. There will be, if they can eliminate the filibuster, then they will be able to pass much more harsh gun control measures than what we saw earlier this year. That can and will happen. It's not just about guns. As a matter of fact, I would argue that the Second Amendment is the secondary thing that they want to attack. That is an important thing, but it's secondary to our rights and our economy as it pertains to the environment, climate change. That's the big one. And they're going to get a lot more Republicans than you expect in the House to shift. They don't need many, folks. Republicans have a razor thin margin there. And they'll be able to get some movement as it pertains to climate change. I have a guest coming on. Somebody I didn't meet until literally like just a few minutes ago. Okay. He went to go get dressed and then he should be coming on in a second now. And when he does, we'll ask him about he's fighting against the climate change agenda, climate change hoax. He's fighting for the sake of of Herschel Walker in Georgia, just as we all should. So stay tuned. I'll be right back with a gentleman by the name of Guy Mitchell. Like I said, I just met him. So hopefully he's not crazy. So we'll see. Stand by. Folks, the majority of our pharmaceuticals, the ingredients in them, come from China. They are controlled by the Chinese Communist Party. We're already seeing supply chain issues. Pharmacies are running low on a lot of things. And if the crap hits the fan, as a lot of us think it may in the very near future, you will want antibiotics. And the best way to get that is to go to jdrucker.com/meds. You'll be able to get a teleconference with an actual doctor, and then they'll send you meds. They'll send you like five different versions or types of antibiotics for the different ailments that could hit us. These are great for long-term storage. You will want them. And it's one of those things where if you need them, then you'll want them. If you don't need them, then at least you'll have them. So, and here's the thing. If you don't have them, you're almost certainly going to need them at least sometime in the near future. So jdrucker.com/meds. You know, as I've said for a long time, the Senate is the key to making sure that we can slow down. We can't stop all of the devastation that's happening in our country, but we can at least slow it down if we can prevent the end of the filibuster. That, to me, is the biggest goal. Of course, the goal just a couple of weeks ago was to take control of the Senate and see how many seats we could get on top of that, but then things went crazy. We can talk about that some other time. I am joined today by someone who, frankly, I don't know a whole lot about him, so I'm going to have to, I didn't get a chance to depose the interviewee today, so I'm going to allow him to introduce himself. All I know is that his name is Guy Mitchell, and he's, judging from the 35 seconds of research I did ahead of time, I can tell you this guy knows what he's talking about. So, Guy, pleasure to have you on the show today.
Thank you very much, JD.
Pleasure so to tell be us with about, you. Oh, absolutely. Tell us a bit about yourself. You know, what is it? Yeah, I know the things that I looked up in a very short period of time. We were introduced by a mutual friend. The things that I looked up in a very short period of time tell me that you are a man who, you know what you're talking about. You love this nation, and you're trying to fight for it. So tell us a little bit about yourself, and then let's get into Herschel Walker and Raphael Warnock in Georgia and the Senate and all that stuff.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I'm a native Alabamian. And lived in, essentially grew up in Birmingham, Alabama. Moved around quite a bit during my career with a public company. I was a superintendent in a steel mill in East Chicago, Indiana. I was a general manager of a construction materials business in Saudi Arabia. And I was a foreman and a shift foreman in a power plant, a coal-fired power plant. I left there and started my own business about 25 years ago. And we, DeShazo, we design and manufacture heavy-duty industrial overhead cranes. We've got 25 regional offices nationwide where we service any maker model of overhead crane. And we design automated equipment using robotics. And so that's kind of my background. And I'm a mechanical engineer by education. And I've spent more than 40 years working in industry.
Do you consider yourself to be a Republican, a conservative? And again, just because we were introduced by our mutual friend, my good friend, Jerry McLaughlin, who he runs Special Guests, which they basically help conservatives reach people. Tell me, but, you know, politically speaking, are you Republican? Are you conservative? Are you, you know, where do you stand in the whole political spectrum?
Yeah. Well, I'm a conservative, and I have traditionally voted for the Republican candidate in local and national elections. I would probably describe myself as more of a libertarian than anything else. I favor less government. As President Reagan once said, the government is not the solution. And I think in most cases, we see where the private sector, if left to deal with many issues, could do a better job. But so I have been, even though I'm from Alabama and my grandmother was a Blue Dog Democrat, I've been a Republican now for virtually all of my life.
Well, speaking of Blue Dog Democrats, you know, we've been blessed so far as a nation. I would say that, you know, and I'm not a big fan of Joe Manchin, a lot of his politics and his career, but he has, let's face it, if it wasn't for Joe Manchin, there's a very good chance we would have lost the filibuster, we would have had Build Back Better passed, we would have had all of this crazy legislation, even worse than what was shoved down our throat the first 2 years of the Biden-Harris regime. So, you know, I don't have to like him to appreciate what he's been able to do, but here's the thing. If Raphael Warnock wins re-election, if Herschel Walker is beaten on, well, I'm sure it'll be after December 6th, when the election is, if Raphael Warnock wins, that would mean that the Democrats would have a 51-49 control. They won't need Manchin in order to get rid of the filibuster. You, based upon everything you've said, you know, loving this country, and you are correct when you say that from a libertarian perspective, the less government, the better. You know, when they get involved, they just tend to make things bad. Okay, let's face it. Pretty much everything in private industry, generally speaking, can handle things better than the government. Now, I'm not talking about, for example, military or anything like that. I'm talking about the things that government keeps sticking its nose into. And if Herschel Walker loses, then government's going to be able to stick its nose into a lot more things. And for those people that think, oh, Kevin McCarthy's going to save us, I don't think he will. What compelled you, now that you know what compelled me to get so involved in this race, what compelled you? What are you seeing out there? Why are you looking at Georgia as so important? And what are you guys doing getting ready to do to try to help that election head in the right direction?
Well, I have been a supporter of Herschel Walker ever since he announced his candidacy. I'm not sure that Americans in total and Georgians perhaps in particular understand the critical nature of this race. The stakes really could not be higher for the United States. And Herschel Walker, I think, represents the vast majority of Georgians, Floridians, Alabamians, and I think people in the United States in terms of his support for traditional family values, in terms of his support for small businesses. He's a small businessman and been very successful, is in favor of lowering taxes and extricating the government from the affairs of those of us that have started a business. And then also, I think he understands the critical nature of the energy needs of this country and would support legislation to permit U.S. companies to drill for oil and gas here in our country. And 2 years ago, we were energy independent. So I think he supports, I think he represents the vast majority of Georgians and in my opinion, Americans. And I think his role is critical in trying to derail the left-wing liberal agenda of the Democrat Party, which is anathema to everything that a freedom-loving American ought to support.
I'm going to quote that line, anathema to everything that freedom-loving Americans ought to support, because that is so very true. That's a great one. I gotta write that down. Where's my notepad? That's fair. Now, we've had some challenges of late. The last two elections, I'd say we've had some challenges. And again, I have not deposed this particular interviewee, so I don't know, Guy, where you stand on the idea. But my contention is that we need more than just a victory. We need a massive, massive victory for Herschel Walker to actually, quote unquote, win. Because I think that, you know, as much as they try to slow down, they passed a law to try to add voter integrity to the mix, but it's not nearly as strong as what, for example, Ron DeSantis did down in Florida. You know, his voter, and it wasn't really just him, it was really the Florida State Legislature that passed voter integrity laws that yielded, you know, with, imagine that if there's voter integrity laws, all of a sudden you have a massive red wave in Florida. They did a little bit in Georgia, which is why I think that, you know, we were able to at least get to a runoff. But I would contend that they are at least attempting to change the results or enhance the results, whatever you want to call it, of the Georgia election with these early balloting and all that stuff. What is your perspective? I mean, are they going to try to steal the Georgia election, and what can we do to stop them, if anything at all?
Well, I think if you look at the polls of Americans as regards their belief in the rectitude of the polling process in a lot of states, there's a lot of concern about the issue of voter fraud. And of course, it's been expressed in the last two elections we've had, the 2020 presidential election and the midterm election. In fact, there's litigation ongoing in several states now. I believe Arizona is one of them, challenging some of the results. So I certainly am very concerned that there could be an effort to try to affect the results of the election. And that's why when I read that, I think it's Kelly Loeffler, am I pronouncing her name correctly? Who was, I think she barely lost to Raphael Warnock in the recent election, called for a massive voter turnout. And I think that's so important because I agree with you. I think there should be, I would love to see Herschel Walker win by 10 percentage points. I think it needs to be a decisive victory that sends the message from Georgians to the United States, to every American, that we support the agenda of the Republican Party. We do not want the filibuster to be eliminated. We do not want some of the far left wing elements of the Democrat Party to hold Joe Biden hostage and pass legislation that is not in concert with the views that we have. So I think it needs to be a large turnout. I think people need to vote for Herschel, and I know he'll do a great job.
I do too. I think that, I've been a Herschel Walker fan since I played football in high school and wore the number 34. So, hey, look, I've always, but that's a different time, a different life, and definitely many, many years ago. So, yes. And I think that you're right. If we look back at the 2020, it was technically the 2021, January 2021 runoff election, both Senate seats were up at that point. And I would argue that both Loeffler and David Perdue actually won their races, and that they were stolen from them. The races were very close. And I think that because Democrats, because the powers that be, because whoever you want to blame, they really, 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 really wanted a Democrat majority in the Senate. So I think they stole both Georgian elections, but that's the past. I can talk about how we expose that at some other point. We're talking about an election that's coming up here in less than 2 weeks. So with that understood, you mentioned energy, and I want to get into, because I know that's more along your wheelhouse. We'll talk about that and environmentalism and all that here in a moment. But I want to ask you one final question regarding Herschel Walker in this race. What is your biggest concern? Okay, we know you'd mentioned that what the Democrats can do, but let's say that they're able to get 51. Let's say that Raphael Warnock wins. Let's say that Kevin McCarthy is feckless and not able to really stop the agenda from rolling. What are your biggest concerns for this next 2 years if they have a filibuster proof? I'm sorry, not a fill. If they remove the filibuster and have control of the Senate, what do you fear the most coming from Democrats and the Biden-Harris regime going forward?
Well, JD, as you may know, I wrote a book which was published in January of this year called Global Warming, the Great Deception, the Triumph of Dollars and Politics Over Science and Why You Should Care. And it's on Amazon.com in a ebook, paperback, and hardcover format. The gist of the book, first, I use the principles of the first principles of the relevant sciences to prove that the global warming hypothesis is fraudulent and that CO2 does not cause global warming. And my concern is flawed hypotheses have come and gone in science for centuries and maybe even millennia if you go back to Ptolemy. So the fraudulent hypothesis itself is not my concern, but my concern is the effort to reconfigure the power grid. And you're seeing in the European Union right now the effects of essentially eliminating coal-fired power plants and powering 40% of the electric grid with natural gas. They bought cheap natural gas from Russia, which has been cut off. Now they're experiencing inflation, I mean, significant inflation, even greater than the United States, and the prospect of rolling blackouts and maybe even blackouts for extended period. So there's obviously a left wing of the Democrat Party that's pushing the agenda, the Green New Deal, alternative energy sources. And I think that, there's a place for judicious use of alternative wind and solar generators. There's some technical issues. But my concern is that you'd have Democrats who are operating on emotion and not intellect and would reconfigure the power grid and do irreparable harm to our economy and lower our standard of living. And so I think, notwithstanding the fact that President Biden hadn't allowed energy companies to drill for oil and gas in this country, which is absolutely dumb, I think that agenda has got to be stopped in its tracks. And I think that's probably one of the most important issues facing the American people that a lot of American people may not fully understand.
No, they don't. And I want to talk more about your book. I just want to note it that this is the first show I've ever done where I had a guest that referenced Ptolemy. So kudos to you, sir, for that. Brand new. Yes. No, it's true. We've spoken about it before. You know, Saikat Chakrabarty, who launched Justice Democrats, he's the architect of the Green New Deal. He was AOC's initial chief of staff. The guy is a radical. And he even declared back in 2019, he's like, oh, you guys thought that the Green New Deal was about climate change. No. It's about the economy. It's always about the economy and shaping it the way that they want it, and in my opinion, shaping it in a way that gets destroyed so they truly can build back better or try to build back better and impose the Great Reset upon us. But then again, that's just my humble opinion. One more question before the break. You said earlier, and I'm sure you'll say again, that this is a huge risk as far as the whole, whatever the agenda they push forward. Do you think that if, again, we're talking hypothetical, if Raphael Warnock wins, they eliminate the filibuster, they get Republicans in Congress, Kevin McCarthy and some of the more lukewarm Republicans there to go along with this green agenda, and of course with the Biden-Harris regime pressing it hard, what do you expect them to go after first? I mean, it's hard to say that, oh, they're just going to try to eliminate, coal, natural gas, whatever it is. Be more specific. Do you think that they're going to try to allow this inflation that we're seeing, obviously in gas, and we're going to be seeing it in electricity as well as heating costs? Is there anything specific, anything that we should be concerned about with that Democrat majority that specifically you think, oh my gosh, that one, that's the killer, that's the death blow, that could really destroy America if they could ever accomplish this, like, I don't know, getting rid of nuclear or something crazy like that? What are your thoughts there, sir?
Well, I think you can look to Mr. Biden and the comments he recently made, and And he was very clear about their agenda from a from an energy standpoint. You know, he said, we want to eliminate coal-fired power plants. And coal-fired power plants play a critical role. Fossil fuel, interestingly enough, they don't attack natural gas, which, of course, produces carbon dioxide just like coal does. But the idea that one would eliminate coal-fired power plants in the United States could be a catastrophic blow to the economy, because that's essentially what's happened in the EU, and look where they are now. I mean, there is ongoing in the European Union, in a sense, a deindustrialization of that 27 member country, and the reason is the cost of their energy stands to make them non-competitive worldwide. So if there's a move to impose a carbon tax, if you look at what the recently concluded COP27 climate conference in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, they're talking about imposing a carbon tax on all carbon emitters, which would include power plants. And so what happened, the logical extension of that is these utilities look at their operating costs. And if they have a large carbon tax on emissions of carbon dioxide, then they're going to try to decommission and put these coal-fired power plants out of operation. And so you've got two choices. You can either try to burn more natural gas, or you can try to put more alternative energy sources like wind turbines and solar voltaic cells in. The problem with that is they have some technical limitations at this standpoint. And so you run the risk of destabilizing our power grid. And we, the European, you know, we could end up being in a very similar position to where the Europeans are. Now, here's another issue. In 2021, China built three times the coal-fired power plants as the rest of the world combined. They're presently buying all of Mr. Putin's oil and gas. And they, anybody that doesn't, first of all, doesn't think the Chinese atmosphere is connected to the rest of the world needs a lesson in basic science. But if anybody, China or India, if anybody thinks the Chinese or the Indians are going to stop burning coal, that is the height of naivete. And it could have, if we were allowed to have left-wing Democrat politicians push this agenda and eliminate coal-fired power plants, it would put us in a very difficult position from a competitive standpoint, industrially, as well as worldwide, as well as affect every American standard of living.
Yes, it would. Yes, it would. Guy, can I get you for one more segment at least?
Sure.
Perfect. Now let's go to a quick break, and we will be right back with Guy Mitchell. Stay tuned. It's November, and I know a lot of people are waiting for Black Friday deals and whatever, yada, yada, yada. I try to find the deals that are available throughout the month, and one place that does have deals available throughout the month is one of my wonderful sponsors for preparedness, for long-term storage food and solar supplies and water supplies and whatever. You know, now is a good time. And I would say, hey, folks, if there was ever a time that you want to give preparedness equipment to your loved ones for Christmas, this would be the year to do it. So go to jdrucker.com/November. That's jdrucker.com/November. And you'll find up to 68% off on a wide array of preparedness, equipment, supplies, all that good stuff. So jdrucker.com/November. Yeah, anybody who's watched my show or listened to me before, I've said many times that at heart, I am an environmentalist. I do believe that within the next, say, 50, maybe 100, maybe 200 years, the technology will finally catch up and we can start looking at clean stuff. And I'm not an environmentalist because of global warming or climate change or anything like that. I just think, hey, we got the sun. That makes sense. But it doesn't make sense today because economically speaking, technologically speaking, we can't let go of fossil fuels. We're just not ready. My hope, my prayer is that my great, 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 great grandkids can harness the sun to power all their needs. Okay. But today we need oil. We need gas. We need coal. We need all of it. Okay. That's my personal take. But I also think that people, especially Democrats, there's two types of environmentalists out here. You've got the environmentalists who are true believers. These are the ones that are gluing their hands to Ferraris and laying down in traffic and hurting people, damaging property, doing all these crazy things that eco-terrorists like to do. And these are the true believers. And it's not just the people that are terrorists. It's also your suburban housewife who's sitting there. Oh, you know, we gotta stop climate change. But even though it's clearly based on the science, it clearly is a hoax. Then you have the people that are actually at the top, the people that are in control. They know what this is about. They know that it's about controlling the economy. They know that it's about controlling the people. We have Guy Mitchell with us for this next segment, and he's actually written a book kind of heading in that direction. Guy, am I correct in assuming that, number one, the technology isn't there? Number two, this is about the economy. And number three, they're really trying to kill us. Okay, maybe not that last one, but you get the idea. Tell us, number one, tell us first where we can find that book that you wrote this year, or that you published this year, and then expand on that. Tell us what the plan is from the left.
Okay, thank you. Well, the title of the book is Global Warming, the Great Deception, the Triumph of Dollars and Politics Over Science and Why You Should Care. And it's on sale at Amazon.com in ebook, paper book, and hardcover form. And you can also purchase it through my website, www.globalwarmingdeception.com. As regards alternative energy sources, electric cars or electric vehicles, I am not a proponent of any of those emerging technologies. And I say emerging technologies because they are emerging. There are a lot of things we do not know about wind turbines, generated power, and solar photovoltaic cells, particularly the former. There are many technical issues about how you try to integrate, these are known as asynchronous generators, and how you integrate them into your power grid reliably. The current thinking is they're not baseload generators. I'm an environmentalist as much as anybody you'd ever know. I've fished and hunted and loved the outdoors all my life. But people need to understand CO2 doesn't cause global warming. If you can jump that hurdle, then you can look at all of these in a responsible way and say, what are the best practices to employ all these different alternative energy sources in a manner that makes good sense economically and is reliable? Yeah, at the end of the day, nuclear power is the way to go. You know, it's paradoxical that the French, who generate more than 70% of their electricity from nuclear power, are sitting over in the EU, and they're the least affected other than fossil fuels to power their cars and trucks and, you know, transport vehicles for their economy. But nuclear energy is the way to go. And I find it interesting that the proponents of this fraudulent global warming hypothesis haven't pushed that more, but I know the answer. And here's the answer. The answer is in 2004, when Al Gore and a partner from Goldman Sachs, David Blood, formed Generation Investment Management in London, the global market for trading carbon credits was $10 billion. In 2019, it was estimated to be $210 billion. And at the end of 2021, it was estimated to be over $800 billion. And so all of this push, this recent COP27 climate conference at Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, they came away with an agreement amongst the parties who attended, which were primarily people that had a stake in the fraudulent global warming hypothesis, that $4 to $6 trillion a year needed to be spent to move the world away from fossil fuel-based power generation to green, I guess, which must be alternative. I mean, must be wind and solar, because they never mentioned nuclear. It's all about the money. You've got two of the largest investment firms in the world, in BlackRock and Vanguard, Al Gore's firm, Harvard Management Corporation. They're all piling in there, and they're offering all of these what they call ESG investments, but they're green energy investment vehicles to try to offer woke clients the opportunity to feel good about investing in all this stuff. And it's a big scam. It's all about the money. I mean, that's just plain and simple. That's why these people continue to promote the hypothesis.
Well, that's why Governor DeSantis did push against ESG. Yeah, for those who aren't familiar, environment, social, and governance, this concept that BlackRock, Vanguard, State Street, and many of the other these other tyrants, I call them, in business, they're trying to force this environmental wokeism on people because, in my humble opinion, people such as the World Economic Forum, the Council for Inclusive Capitalism, and many of these other globalist apparatus, I don't even know the word, but their push is to make environmentalism everything, because if they can control climate change as the predicate for all decision making, which they're in the process of doing, then they can control us. Yeah, I think it was Henry Kissinger who said something to the effect of, he who controls energy can control entire continents. And he was absolutely correct. And we're seeing that playing out in real time, not just in the EU, but also in Australia, in Japan, and here in the United States. Which brings us back full circle. Now that we know the stakes, now that we know why I believe, and I believe you believe, that they're going to try to change the results or push the results of this election towards Raphael Warnock, what do you think they're going to do? I mean, you'd mentioned, for example, that they're going to be pushing the Green New Deal and concepts like that. But do they have any chance? Like, is there teeth, and is there anything that they're going to attempt to do between, you know, if they get the majority, or if they get the filibuster removed, are they going to try to essentially eliminate everything? We're already seeing it out here in California. Okay, I'm out here in California. Don't ask me why, but we're already seeing it to where they're trying to make it to where you can't drive a gas powered car. Okay, as ludicrous as that would have sounded like 6 months ago, a year ago, 2 years ago, they're doing it. I'm going to have to leave California in order to hop into my four-wheel drive SUV that is powered by gasoline here in the near future. Is that going to happen nationwide if Democrats get control, if Raphael Warnock wins and Herschel Walker loses? What are your thoughts, sir?
I think there's a definite chance that could be the case. I mean, you have to understand at the heart of this, and I make this point in my book, it's all about control. And for politicians, it's about controlling the electorate. As I think I said to you, perhaps during the break, during the coronavirus pandemic was termed as an existential threat. Now, under those conditions, American citizens allowed their federal, state, and local governments to infringe on their rights that are enshrined in the Constitution of the United States. Freedom of assembly. Couldn't have more than 25 people in a gathering. You had to wear a face mask. You had to social distance. Businesses were closed. Houses of worship were closed. All these things people would have never accepted. Now, Mr. Biden and climate envoy John Kerry have posited climate change as an existential threat. And of course, that logically leads the government to have the right to pass regulation and legislation regulation through like the EPA, legislation through obviously the laws we've talked about, the Inflation Reduction Act being one of them, that would limit our rights as citizens. So, you know, then the next question is, what's the logical conclusion of all this? Well, suppose that obesity is declared to be a national epidemic and an existential threat. Does that mean that Americans will not be allowed to eat meat? Does that mean that Coca-Cola and people like that who protested the change in laws and the electoral law changes in Georgia will be put out of business? I mean, you don't know where all this goes, but if you allow regulators and politicians to use pseudoscience to try to control the lives of the electorate, then we begin to see our personal freedoms eroded. And that is, what form it could take. I mean, Gavin Newsom outlawed internal combustion engines after 2035 in California. Many other states are considering the same sort of legislation under the assumption that this fraudulent global warming hypothesis is real. And so where does it go from there? And what other crises will appear in the future that the government will use the opportunity to try to control our lives? And I don't think that's a too far-fetched scenario.
I don't either. I think that you're spot on. I have one final question for you, sir, but first, I know we've already talked about it a couple of times. You mentioned that it's on Amazon. Please tell us your website, tell us your book, tell us why people need to go out and buy it right now.
Okay. Well, my website is www.globalwarmingdeception.com. The title of the book is Global Warming, the Great Deception, the Triumph of Dollars and Politics Over Science and Why You Should Care. And that subtitle says it all in the sense that many people don't see this global warming issue is directly affecting them. You know, they read about these UN politicians and Al Gore pontificating about, you know, AOC says, you know, the earth will perish via thermal destruction in 12 years, and John Kerry drops it back one, you know, but this is a scientific issue. It's not a political issue. It's been co-opted by politicians. And so there's a real danger. And but anyhow, I think it's important for people to understand what the risks are and try hard to make sure we have politicians like Herschel Walker who understand the need for America to be energy independent and relying on ourselves, because it's a national security issue.
It is, and he's actually said that specifically himself. So my final question for you, Mr. Guy Mitchell, is we've talked a lot about energy. We're seeing this food crisis starting, you know, food shortages coming. They're pushing for lab-grown meat as their protein. They're pushing for mealworms and crickets as their protein. We're seeing, obviously, this push for big pharma to have complete and total control through not just the CDC and the FDA, but also through the World Health Organization with the pandemic treaty, which is not dead. It's still alive. People, they pretended it was gone, but it's not. It's rearing its ugly head once again. You have all of these different things that are happening all apparently at the same time. My question for you, and this might be out of your wheelhouse, you could say, Rucker, just stuff it. We'll skip that question if you'd like, but I would love to hear your perspective because I know mine. Do you think that the food crisis, the energy crisis, the medical crises, the everything that's going on, is this just a perfect storm of random coincidences? Or is this something that's manufactured? Is this happening to us on purpose? What do you say?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Henry Kissinger once said many years ago, as I believe when he was Secretary of State, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean someone is not out to get you. So conspiracy theory, the legacy media has done a great job of, of biasing the public to think that there is no such thing as a conspiracy, but yet you look at what happened to President Trump with the Department of Justice and its very arms, and it's hard to see that there wasn't a coordinated effort. So you say to yourself, well, are all these things, the product of a grand conspiracy? I don't know the answer to that. I don't think the tech moguls and globalists and others are that smart and that well educated. However, there's always a linkage. Take, for example, the problem that we got with fertilizer. You mentioned fertilizer. The cost of fertilizer have gone up. Well, why? Well, two reasons. Number one, the war on Ukraine, and Ukraine was a major exporter of fertilizer. And natural gas, which is an important component of the manufacture of fertilizer, the prices tripled on the world market. So there are all these. I actually wrote an op-ed, which is on my website. It's titled "The Law of Unintended Consequences," and what it means is simply this: is that when Mr. Putin invaded Ukraine, and the West decided to impose economic sanctions, the EU reluctantly came along after the US, and we cut off the purchase of the natural gas from Ukraine and from Russia, excuse me. And so what happened is, or we threatened to cut it off, and that was going to be in stages. The EU was going to cut back some this month in December and some in February. Well, what happens? Mr. Putin retaliates against the economic sanctions by cutting off the gas. Then somebody blows up the Nord Stream 1 pipeline. So now, all of a sudden, what's happening in the EU? They're moving towards coal-fired power plants. The Netherlands, which had, they kind of had their coal-fired power plants idled, they're bringing them back. Germany bringing them back. They recently passed a law that allowed coal-fired power. So what happens is there's this huge, result of unintended consequences that happen in these various disparate actions that occur around the world. And unfortunately, they don't tend to produce a good result. They tend to produce a bad result. And I think that's what we're seeing with inflation, the worldwide inflation, particularly in the EU, food shortages, supply chain shortages. It's a perfect storm of events, whether it's being orchestrated by two or three, billionaire tech. I don't think so, but I mean, who knows?
Does know. And I think that there are people who know, and maybe there's higher powers that know. I would tend to agree with you that Bill Gates, Klaus Schwab, George Soros, Mark Zuckerberg, Barack Obama, and the like, that they're not clever enough to pull this off on their own. But then again, there are powers and principalities that may be guiding them. It could be demonic. Who knows? I know that I don't know. Guy Mitchell, pleasure and an honor having you on. I'm very glad. I'm very, very, very glad to have met you, because I didn't know until Jerry introduced us 10 minutes before this interview. I didn't know that I needed to know you. And now I am glad that I do. And we have to get you back on the show in the very near future, sir. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you, JD. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, that's it, folks. Lord willing, you'll help to get Herschel Walker elected. And Lord willing, we will be back very soon with another episode. But in the meantime, you all stay strong, stay safe, and God bless. I recently asked Jonathan Rose from Genesis Gold Group why people should consider him, his America First company, his Christian company, why they should go to his company for their precious metals needs. You can find more information about him at jdrucker.com/wealth. Here is his response to my question.
Well, first of all, I think in this economy that we're witnessing right now, people need to educate themselves on what's happening in the market. That's the most crucial. Find out where your money's parked. Find out how it's going to be affected by this looming recession. If not, it's being affected already. And find out the solutions that you can use right now to, you know, fortify your earnings, your retirement, and make sure that it's safeguarded. I say, you know, build a financial bunker. The reasons why we need to do this is because top banks, top economists are all telling us to, you know, build shelter on a higher ground, brace ourselves for an economic hurricane. And the best way we can prepare is also by having knowledge. So by calling Genesis Gold Group, you know, every single listener gets a free economic report. This is something that's very important to understand, so you can understand what we're facing and what we're dealing with right now. By owning precious metals through an IRA or 401k, or having physical delivery of metals, something you can use, tradable currency, real currency, you know, that's the key to longevity in preserving the purchasing power, you know, of your portfolio. And I'm a big believer in, you know, you don't wait to buy gold, you buy gold and wait.
That was Jonathan Rose from Genesis Gold Group. You can find information about his company at jdrucker.com/wealth. You can contact him straight from there and get going on protecting your wealth, protecting your retirement with gold or silver from a Christian America First precious metals company.